Iraqi Prime Minister, who is set to visit Washington, says his country no longer needs U.S. combat troops to fight the Daesh. Afghan government forces push back Taliban militants from strategic positions in more than a dozen provinces. Police in France and Greece clash with protesters angry over coronavirus policies. Similar events are held in several other countries. This is World News with me, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. The Iraqi Prime Minister says that his country no longer needs American combat troops, and a formal time frame for the withdrawal would depend on the outcome of his talks with U.S. officials. In an interview, Mustafa al-Kadhimi said that American withdrawal schedule would be based on the needs of Iraqi forces. Al-Kadhimi, who is set to meet with U.S. President Joe Biden in Washington Monday, underlined that the Iraqi army is capable of conducting its own independent operations against Daesh terrorists. However, the premier said that Iraq will ask for the U.S. help for training and military intelligence gathering in its fight against terrorism. The U.S. agreed in April to remove over 2,500 combat troops out of Iraq, but no timetable was announced. In January 2020, Iraqi parliament issued a resolution demanding the government to expel American forces from the country. Political analyst Mohsen Saleh, to whom I talked to an hour ago, says that he doesn't believe the American forces will leave Iraq peacefully.
The Americans should have withdrawn long ago. But with this government, with the Kadhimi government, and with the statements by the Foreign Minister Fuad Hussein, I don't think there is a decision in this government to ask the Americans to withdraw. And occupiers never leave peacefully. They should understand that. And the Hashd al-Sha'bi popular unit, I guess, they were able to succeed in putting an end to the movement of the American troops in Iraq, especially in the around Baghdad and in the southern part and many parts in the middle of Iraq. That's why I guess Kadhimi should have the license of the Iraqi people and the Iraqi movements and the Iraqi political factions in Iraq.
The Turkish Defense Ministry says two of its soldiers have been killed and two others wounded in an attack on their armored vehicle in northern Syria. Turkish forces immediately launched retaliatory fire against what are called terrorist positions. The attack happened in a region where Turkey launched a cross-border operation in 2016 to drive away Daesh terrorists and Syria's Kurdish YPG forces. According to media reports, the Turkish soldiers came under attack in the Bab al-Bab area of Aleppo province. Turkey has significant military presence in northwestern Syria. Ankara regards Kurdish YPG as a terrorist group linked to the Kurdistan Workers' Party militants who have been fighting against Turkey for decades. Afghan government troops have pushed back Taliban militants from strategic positions in more than a dozen provinces. Military officials say that scores of militants have also been killed in clashes with government forces. Amin Alami provide us with some details regarding the army operations in different parts of Afghanistan.
According to a statement released by Afghanistan's defense ministry, at least 175 Taliban militants were killed and at least 81 others were wounded as a result of counterattack operations conducted by Afghan ground and aerial forces, mainly in northern Tahar province as well as in southern Helmand. These attacks were launched across 14 out of 34 provinces of Afghanistan, according to this statement released by Afghanistan's defense ministry. In the meantime, the Afghan security forces say that Afghan troops could successfully take the control of Ispin Buldak, that is a border point between Afghanistan and Pakistan in southern Afghanistan. And now, according to officials here in Kabul, Ispin Buldak port is under the control of the Afghan government. Despite the Afghan government says that Islam Kala custom, that is also another key border point that connects Afghanistan with Iran, is also under the control of the Afghan government. But the Taliban militants say that we are controlling this area as well.
Israeli forces have fatally shot a Palestinian teenager in the occupied West Bank. We've discussed the regime's violence against Palestinians with our guest in our News Review program.
And now, Palestinians have held a funeral for a 17-year-old boy killed during an Israeli raid on a village in the occupied West Bank. Mourners carried the body of Mohammed Muni al-Tamimi through the streets to the burial grounds. The teenage boy succumbed to his wounds at a hospital a day after being shot by Israeli forces. He was shot during protests against illegal settlements in the town of Beita near Nablus. On Friday, hundreds of Palestinians gathered in Beita to demonstrate against Israeli aggression and forceful confiscation of their lands. Regime forces fired tear gas and rubber bullets, injuring over 300 ralliers. Palestinians have vowed to continue the protests until they take back their land. Joining us now for the program is Mona Candiel from Ramallah and Paul Larudi from the Free Palestine Movement, joining us from Berkeley, California. Hello, and I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Hope you're safe both and doing well. Mona, we're going to start with you to get the latest, if you could, please.
Well, on Friday, several protests and demonstrations took place across the occupied West Bank in the village of Beita, northern the occupied West Bank in Nablus. Hundreds of Palestinians took part in a protest against the building of an illegal settlement known as Aviatar. It was built on the lands confiscated from Mount Sabih. Palestinians were demanding that the settlement should be removed because settlers left the settlement. However, Israeli occupation forces were protecting the settlement and saying that they will allow the Israeli settlers to return back. We are speaking about over 320 Palestinians were wounded in this protest in Beita. In another place, in the village of Nabi Saleh, northern the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah, another protest was held against the Israeli expansion of the Israeli settlements there, when Palestinian teenager Mohammed Munir al-Tamimi, 17-year-old, was shot in the back, according to his relatives, and he succumbed to his injuries. Today, hundreds of Palestinians took part in the funeral processions that was held for Mohammed al-Tamimi in his hometown village of Deir Nizam, northwest occupied Ramallah. Palestinians chanted anti-Israel slogans and chanted slogans against the Israeli crimes and aggression being carried out against the Palestinians, the peacefully demonstrating people against the settlements in the occupied West Bank.
Mona and Paul, welcome to the program. Your initial thoughts on this, Paul, and it's crazy, while Palestinians are fighting tooth and limb to try to get back land they've had stolen from them over the past 70-some-odd years, they're still having land taken away from them on a daily basis. Even today, it boggles the mind. Your thoughts?
Well, this has been the plan for Palestine for the last 100 years or so, to go by increments, to conduct ethnic cleansing and genocide by increments, to slowly increase the suffering and to expel meters and even centimeters to slowly colonize more and more of the land and to confiscate the land from the people who have owned it for almost 2,000 years. And so this is simply part of the continuing effort to do that. And the Israelis are becoming gradually more and more violent and brutal in their occupation because they're reaching, because they can, basically. Because the reports in the Western media, if they vary very little from day to day, no matter how brutal, if they slowly become more brutal, then a lot of the Western audience doesn't even listen to it. It's not even broadcast on the media. People don't know it's happening.
Hmm. And Mona, June 13th, we saw after it seemed like a forever term for Benjamin Netanyahu, we finally saw him leave. We saw Naftali Bennett come in as new prime minister. Has anything changed on the ground with dialogue between Israelis and Palestinians or the treatment of the Palestinians by the Israelis?
Palestinians, from the first moment and the news about changing Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu with a new Israeli Prime Minister, Palestinians said they don't expect any change in the policy of the Israeli administration, of the Israeli regime. However, they expect that the new Israeli cabinet would be even worse than Netanyahu's one, because it's well known that Bennett and Gantz, they both fully support Israeli settlements, and they declared several times in the past that they will not accept for a settlement activity to stop here in the occupied West Bank. And that's why Palestinians don't expect that there would be any kind of negotiation or talks with this Israeli regime, because Netanyahu's policy was a little bit well known. He was supporting settlements, but because of the American, position sometimes during the Obama's, term on office, they had to stop expansion of settlements for a while. They returned back to settlement construction during the Trump's era, but they were not publicly speaking about the thousands of new settler units. However, the new Israeli regime is saying clearly that settlement expansion would continue, settlement activity would continue, and they will not listen to any demands, whether from any part of the world, from the international community or the European Union, because this Israeli regime knows very well that they need the support of the Israeli settler community, and they have to please them. Otherwise, they could regime could fail, and the Israelis would have again to go for another election.
Thank you both for joining us on the program. Stay safe, both of you. Mona Candiel from Ramallah and Mr. Paul Arudi joining us from Berkeley, California.
Police have clashed with anti-lockdown protesters in the Greek and French capitals as anger is boiling in several European countries and Australia over restrictions to stem the spread of the coronavirus. Riot police in Athens fired tear gas and water cannon to disperse the protesters. This is the second rally in a week in Greece against the COVID vaccination drive. Similar rallies were held in other parts of the world. In France, clashes erupted between police and protesters, angry over new restrictions in place amid a steep rise in infections. Hundreds of ralliers also demonstrated in Italian capital Rome against a compulsory vaccine pass program. In Australia, Sydney, people again hit the streets to denounce a month-long lockdown. The demonstration was held a day after officials said restrictions could remain in place until October. A similar event was held in Melbourne. Now, British lawmakers say that taxpayers will bear the cost of COVID for decades to come. In two new reports, the Public Accounts Committee underlined that the government's response to the crisis has exposed UK's taxpayers to significant financial risks. They also said an inquiry will not come soon enough to learn lessons from the pandemic. In the cross-party reports, legislators further attacked the government's spending on unusable protective kit. They also put the estimated cost of the government's measures at £372 billion. The UK government's debt is now over £2.2 trillion, or something around 99.7% of GDP, a rate not seen since the early 1960s. Brazilians have hit the streets of several cities again to demand impeachment of President Jair Bolsonaro. Scuffles broke out between demonstrators and police in the city of Sao Paulo, with law enforcement personnel using tear gas and flashbangs to disperse the crowd. This is at least the second time this month that Brazilians have held rallies to condemn Bolsonaro over his handling of the COVID pandemic. The president has also seen his popularity decline amid a Senate probe into corruption scandals tied to the purchase of an Indian COVID vaccine. Far-right Bolsonaro is gearing up for re-election next year that's likely to pit him against his political nemesis, former leftist president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Aperture. Welcome back to Aperture. In the first part of the program, we follow Javad, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, to the south of Iran and saw the most amazing combination nature could match together, the desert and the sea. We also met the region's native inhabitants and got acquainted with their unique lifestyle. Stay with us as Javad travels to other villages of the region to discover the culture and customs of the people.
In the past, staple grains for all of Iran came from Sistan and Balochistan. But what for severe drought spells and misguided planning over the years, the province has completely lost that status. But today, in some areas of this province, and in the Bahu Kalat district in particular, all kinds of vegetables and tropical fruits are cultivated. There is a mango tree that's in full bloom, exploding with blossoms. In about 5 months, they will turn into delicious, juicy mangoes. This is heaven indeed. Walking around in the palm groves and other gardens in Bahu Kalat gives me a lot of peace. One of the most beautiful things I come across during my stroll is the Baluchi squirrel. The Baluchi squirrel, also known as the stripy or palm squirrel, is a unique species of rodents living in parts of Iran, Pakistan, India, Nepal, and Bangladesh. The most distinctive feature of this mammal is the dark stripes on a white background on its back. In the past, the inhabitants of Sistan and Balochistan believed these stripes were the fingerprints of the gods. A typical Baluchi squirrel is between 13 and 15 centimeters from its head to the end of its rump, and its tail adds an additional 14 to 19 centimeters to its total length. It's quite refreshing to see Baluchi children playing and gallivanting around in the banana groves. Beautiful, pure souls, the product of their serene, peaceful surroundings. Children of Shir Gwaz spend the whole week waiting to go to the fruit groves near the village to expend some of their inexhaustible energy. What they also do is they cook their traditional food on their own, and just like their elders, they gather around, sing, and play. The kids here have distinctive, innocent faces. They are just gorgeous. And they're all wearing their traditional costumes, boys and girls alike. All wearing traditional clothes. They are among the oldest, most original tribes in Iran. They're very noble and very patient. They are a people with a lot of patience. And although some of them don't have good living conditions, they are very patient folks. They're so content. The Baluchi culture is the perfect example of a culture of nobility and peace. And those cultural traits are readily visible in the architecture of the old houses in this village. The architectural design is endemic to Balochistan. You can't see anything like this anywhere else in Iran. There are also new houses in these areas with designs influenced by Indian and Pakistani cultures and architectures. are the characteristics of Baluch families is their large populations. Wherever in the village I go, I'm surrounded by many of the little angels, offering a breath of fresh air after a long day of hard work. They fill my heart with peace and joy. Perhaps one of the reasons these kids are so happy is their beautiful, tranquil, natural environments. Just as influential is the beautiful, happy colors used in the clothes that these little girls have on. Clothes that are embroidered by the artistic hands of their mothers. Hand embroidery on colorful clothes and fabric is among the most important crafts of Baluchi women. And fortunately, Baluchi women have been able to preserve this exquisite art, a skill handed down through generations. It's noontime. It can get really hot in Shirguaz, even in the middle of winter. But the boys of the village have a good solution to fighting the scorching heat. What they do at a time like this is jump into the waters of Shirguaz River and swim to their heart's content. These children usually play together in groups. The day offers an opportunity for me to make a return to the beautiful carefree days of my own childhood. Live life as an uninhibited, unabashed explorer of the unknown. Playing with these children serves as an outlet for the negative energy in me. Although the children in Shirguaz don't have much to entertain themselves with, they're all growing up happy, healthy, and strong by playing in groups and making the best of what their natural environment provides them with. No computers to spend the whole day on, playing virtual computer games that don't involve any physical activity, video games that have taken the place of playing outside for many kids today, outdoor experiences in nature, and plenty of physical activity that a growing body craves. These children's only toy is nature. Going up trees, diving into the river and swimming, playing with animals, singing songs and helping their parents at home and on the farm, frolicking around and playing with stones and pebbles. This non-stop joyful mobility is the reason behind these children's physical health and happy disposition. Very soon, I leave the village and set out for my next destination. I have to travel 250 kilometers to the west of Baluchistan, to a place 80 kilometers north of the city of Nikshar, a name that reminds me of my country's beautiful north. Given its unique geographical location, Baluchistan has a diverse and strange climate. Some parts of this area is affected by the tropical climate of India, in the south by the Sea of Oman, in the west by the Jazmurian inland basin, and in the north by Lut Desert. Surrounded by these different climatic conditions, Baluchistan features diverse lifestyles and various plant and animal species. Balochistan is a dry, water-thirsty land. The average annual rainfall in the province is around 110 millimeters. But the important thing is, all that water comes down in only a couple of torrential rainfalls that cause the rivers in the province to overflow their banks. The ensuing flooding leaves behind a trail of destruction every time. The people here tell me they get snow and blizzards in some winters too, because of the mountains in the Gorgan area. Perhaps you'll find it interesting to know there is a place named Gorgan in Sistan and Balochistan province. But no, it has nothing whatsoever to do with the city of Gorgan in the north of Iran. This area is comprised of around 11 villages punctuating this mountainous area. It can get freezing cold here. The people of Balochistan say, except for Mount Taftan and Mount Basman, the only other place where you can see snow in the highlands is the same Gorgan region in Balochistan. It can get really cold here. Because of the altitude and the relatively good rainfall here, this valley usually has a good amount of water. And abundant water means life and prosperity. The people of Gorgan are either farmers or orchard owners or livestock keepers. The most important thing for them to be able to do any of those things is to have clean drinking water. The people of the first village I visit are very kind and hospitable. In my conversations with them, I realize all the young people in the village are busy working simply because there is enough water. Everyone has something to do. They're all grateful to God for all their blessings. Their biggest asset is contentment. I could say most of the things I've seen in this village were built from scratch by the men and women living here. They are all content with what they have. They even have electricity. They live a beautiful, simple, and healthy life, away from the hustle and bustle of city life and excesses that distract human beings from their true self and from nature. The Baluch community leads a simple lifestyle in their simple homes in Balochistan. They don't even expect a paved road. The peace that these lovely people exude is a breath of fresh air against the vicissitudes of city life. I am so at peace when I'm in their fold. Before long, I resume my journey and arrive in the village of Archenik, a bucolic settlement second to none. But it isn't the architecture and natural environment that lends Archenik its beauty. The most beautiful thing I come across is the hospitality of the local inhabitants. Archenikis are hard-working, hospitable people. Moments after I reach the village, one of the elders comes to welcome me and invite me to his beautiful house. And the family gives me the red carpet treatment. Personally, I have a lot of respect for the culture and customs of this lovely ancient tribe and have tried my best not to have a negative impact on the culture or any of the good social norms of this community. Instead, I learned from them things that I had no idea about before I met them. I have had many trips to far and exotic places in Iran. And on those trips, I saw many and varied village houses and nomad tents. But nothing like the teeps in the Gorgan region. Beautiful, modest homes that offer peace and tranquility, just like their natural surroundings. Village elder, Pir Muhammad, fills me in on how they build their houses. My trip is nearing its end. That means I have to leave the beautiful Sistan and Balochistan province and head back home. I leave with a bag of experience and memories as sweet as the dates of Gorgan. And I do so knowing that I haven't done any harm to the natural environment and the culture of this ancient tribe.
Well, I'm quite sure that this week's documentary about Iran's natural wonders intrigued all our audience across the globe. And I hope it inspires you to come and explore the hidden treasures of Iran. And that's it for this week. Do keep in touch with us. And until next week, goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
This is for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
أعود بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, brothers and sisters. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and here is Batul. Welcome to the program For a Better Life. In our previous sessions, we asked this question, what is a better life? Then we came to the conclusion that a better life is when a person is happy. Now, this happiness is not the material happiness, but it is happiness of the soul. So how can I reach this happiness? The answer is when I become a better person. Therefore, to have a better life, I need to be a better person first. So how can I become a better person? In the very, very first session, we said that the first step to become a better person is yaqda. What is it? That is to wake up. Wake up from my deep sleep of negligence. Wake up from ghafla. A person who is asleep is not aware of his surroundings. He is as good as a piece of a fallen log of tree. He neither stands nor walks. If there is an earthquake, he will be buried under the rubble of his own house. If there is a flood, we will find his body floating on the waters. He will be a prey to all the calamities because he is sleeping. But a person who is awake can sense the danger around him and will find a way of escape. Therefore, one who is negligent is asleep. This is what our Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi meant in his saying, where he says, An-nasu niyam, fa-idha matu intabahu. People are sleeping. When they will die, they will wake up. Imam Ali alayhi salam also said, Na'udhu billahi min subatil aql. We seek protection of Allah from the slip of wisdom. Now, when did Imam Ali alayhi salam mention this? He mentioned this in the sermon 223 of Nahjul Balagha, where he talks about his brother Aqil. His brother Aqil was going through a hard time. He approached Imam Ali several times. He wanted 3 kilograms of wheat from the Baitul Mal, the Islamic treasury. Imam Ali could feel his brother's pain. He said in the sermon, let me quote it for you. He said, I also saw his children with disheveled hair and a dusty countenance due to starvation, as though their faces had been blackened by indigo. He came to me several times and repeated his request to me again and again. I heard him, and he thought I would sell my faith to him and follow his tread, leaving my own way. Then I heated a piece of iron and took it near his body so that he might take a lesson from it. Then he cried as a person in illness cries with pain, and he was about to get burned with his branding. Then I said to him, "Moaning women will moan over you. Waqil, do you cry on account of this heated iron, which has been made by a man for fun, while you are driving me towards the fire, which Allah the Powerful has prepared for his wrath? Should you cry from pain, but I should not cry from the flames?" Oh my God, amazing words. We will continue with the rest of the sermon after a short break, inshallah.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Welcome back to the program. We are looking into the sermon 223 of Nahjul Balagha. Imam Ali alayhis salam concludes the sermon by saying, "By Allah, even if I am given all the domains of the seven stars with all that exists under the skies in order that I may disobey Allah to the extent of snatching one grain of barley from an ant, I would not do it. For me, your world is lighter than the leaf in the mouth of a locust that is chewing it. What has Ali to do with bounties that will pass away and pleasures that will not last? We seek protection of Allah from the slip of wisdom. Look, brothers and sisters, man's wisdom is idle and inactive where he does not understand. But where he understands and takes no action, his wisdom is silent. Let me give you an example here. Just like a phone, if I shut it down, it will be inactive and all the messages will not be coming in. But if I turn it on and leave it on silent, what will happen? The messages will be coming in, but I will not be aware. I have ignored the messages deliberately. Wisdom needs to be active and diligent, brothers and sisters, and not inactive and asleep. So one who is negligent needs to use his wisdom and wake up, then stand up, and then move. He needs to have that harka, that action. So, how can I wake up from this negligence, from this ghafla? How can I get rid of my uninvited thoughts that even haunt me when I am praying? What is the solution to it? Ayatollah Jawadi Amli said that the solution to the problem of ghafla was two things. One, to take care of our thoughts. Two, to remember Allah constantly, to do dhikr. Look, brothers and sisters, remembering Allah is a good deed. Whoever takes a step towards it, he will be rewarded ample times. Surah An-Naml says, Man ja'a bil hasanati falahu khayrun minha. Whoever brings good, he shall have better than it. Then Surah An'am says, Man ja'a bil hasanati falahu ashru amthaliha. Whoever brings a good deed, he shall have 10 like it. So brothers and sisters, whoever strives to take care of his thoughts, his actions, he is constantly remembering Allah, doing dhikr, he guards himself for an hour, he saves himself for 10 hours, and gradually the more he tries, the more successful he will get. Finally, he will be able to control his thoughts even in his salat. Concentrating in his prayers will become easy for him, inshaAllah. Wa akhiru da'wahum anilhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. So I need. Is all I need.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English.